from your perspective, what happened on the ground in Ferguson last night?
This was, the second night after the Missouri State Highway Patrol kind of took a tactical command of the situation in Ferguson. However, their attempts to kind of quell what had been going on for the four previous nights really hasn't worked. It's failed quite miserably, and that's because it is very difficult, given the nature of the circumstances and the looters and some of the very violent elements of the groups in and around Ferguson. It makes law enforcement's capability, it makes their job very difficult to be able to handle situations like that. So what you've seen last night and the previous night, even under a different command, is pretty much the same thing that we had the four previous nights, which is a lot of folks that are upset and that are voicing their opinion, and they are protesting and they're letting their voices be heard. And then, unfortunately, we have a small group that is mixed in with these peaceful protesters, and they are looking at this as an opportunity to engage in violent acts against the police, against the public, against news reporters, against local businesses. They're looting, they're stealing, they're robbing, they're shooting, and it's very difficult to handle situations like that without some level of force being used against them. In this case, it's the less lethal options, including tear gas and stun grenades.
I'm wondering, in a situation like that, as a police or as law enforcement responding to the scene, how do you keep the peaceful protesters safe when others are looting and becoming violent?
Well, it's a very dynamic and very fluid situation. For instance, when you see tactical officers in the area, the primary reason those officers are there is that they have received the specialized training to deploy less lethal resources like tear gas, stun grenades, flashbangs, which are very loud and very bright light. They're trained in those tactics. Very rarely will they use, there is a continuum that they will use. When you have a peaceful group of, say, 100 people, or what appears to be a peaceful group, but contained within that group, you may have 5 to 10 people who begin throwing rocks, bricks, Molotov cocktails, or incendiary devices at law enforcement. That becomes a problem. And not only is the safety at that point of the protesters who are just there, who are peacefully protesting, it's such a difficult situation, because what if one of those devices were to go off and injure some of the protesters? And so what we do in those situations is many times our officers will announce that the individuals need to leave the area. And usually that's not because we don't want them to peacefully assemble. It's because the situation is deteriorating, and we want to get people who are there to peacefully protest out of harm's way, because there is a small faction of individuals who are looking to escalate this situation. And we continue to see these individuals acting out night after night after night. And it doesn't have anything to do with police tactics. What it has to do with is a very, very violent and selfish group of individuals who are capitalizing on the tragedies, many tragedies that are occurring daily in Ferguson, and they're looking to loot and to steal. Those people aren't protesters. Those people are criminals, and that's the difference, and it's important that we highlight that difference.
Can you tell me a little bit about operations earlier in the week? Riot gear, rubber bullets. Can you tell me why was that necessary?
Well, I will tell you, that's a little bit of a misnomer. I am not aware of any St. Louis County, any St. Louis City, or any St. Charles County officers utilizing rubber bullets. I am aware that they have used a less lethal option that we would call a pepper ball gun. And what that is very similar to paintball guns. And contained within the paintball is I believe it's a very light, very airy type of powder. And when it impacts a surface, it can cause a red mark, but it's still what we would consider a less lethal or non-lethal option. And police have deployed that because you can use those instead of throwing out maybe a gas canister, which may affect a large area, of course. If you are able to isolate individuals that may be holding bricks or that really are showing signs of aggression, you can isolate those individuals and hit them with the pepper ball gun. And yeah, it does sting, but it's no different than the same paintball guns that you could buy at a local sporting goods store. And our officers use them, and our tactical officers use those. They're specially designed, very similar to a paintball, and they will disperse. Again, it's a very light powder. It's very when it impacts, it kind of creates a puff of a kind of a very, very similar to tear gas. It can affect the eyes or the breathing with a burning sensation.
Now, I think I have to stop you there for just a second because I've seen people with very large bruises that I'm assuming are from these pepper balls because you can tell that there's an impact and then the bruise spreads pretty far. And, I mean, multiple people were hit by these. I don't think it was a light impact.
And I'm not saying it is. I've played paintball and I've been hit with those things. And yes, they do sting. They will leave a mark. They will raise the skin. But again, we're still using them as a non-lethal alternative. It's a middle ground where if that person is holding a brick or a Molotov cocktail, we can use that device to potentially disarm that individual. And usually we're not in a situation where we can just run out into the crowd and grab one person. The dynamics of crowd control and the dynamics of these situations, which again, most of the peaceful protesters are, I was standing on the front line, most of the peaceful protesters were well out of harm's way. And a lot of the individuals who were rightfully so, some of them very upset, but also were, in my opinion, kind of spoiling for a fight, were on the receiving end of some less lethal or non-lethal options. And, you know, that is part of police work. And unfortunately, sometimes it isn't pretty, but they are tactics that have been used throughout the United States for decades.
Yeah, your heavy response did draw criticism from a number of figures, and I mean, others say that responding with body armor and armored trucks may have provoked protesters more. What would you say to that?
I'd be open to hearing their ideas or suggestions of how to handle those situations any differently. My chief of police, John Belmar, gave us, you know, marching orders, and one of those is to protect the public, protect life and property. And I understand that visually, at times, the appearance of tactical units and whatnot can be a little bit intimidating. But let me use the last 48 hours as an example. Under the command of the Missouri State Highway Patrol, they have attempted to leave their tactical units out of the area. They have decreased visibility. They, in some cases, have had officers going out on lines without protective gear, which is a whole issue in and of itself. And yet the situation has continued to deteriorate. So the situation was bad when it was the first four nights when St. Louis County was in command of that situation. Quite frankly, there will be reviews and policy reviews and situational reviews of all of this in the future. But what we've seen during the last 48 hours started out with, you know, our commanders and commanders from the Highway Patrol marching, showing solidarity with the peaceful protesters. Again, I want to make sure that I delineate a difference between those two different groups of people. Looters and criminals are much different element than than peaceful protesters. You saw members of our command staff marching and walking. However, during the last 48 hours, the Missouri State Highway Patrol, even though they were very vocal and Chief Sam Dotson of the St. Louis Metropolitan Police Department was very critical of the tactics used during the first 4 days, they are now using those same tactics once again, deploying tear gas, deploying SWAT teams into the area, because they are dealing with, again, that same very small faction of individuals who are looking to capitalize on this opportunity. And now what we have today, if you've seen any media coverage at all, are business owners and individuals who were victimized during the last 48 hours because we were not sending officers down into the area. We had individuals that have been shot, officers that have been injured, people that have been assaulted and robbed, tens of thousands of dollars in damage to stores and businesses in the affected area. And the end result was, once again, now the Missouri State Highway Patrol is using tear gas, stun grenades, and less lethal options to help disperse this particularly violent group of individuals.
Going to a slightly different topic, last night, Lacey Clay arrived at the Quick Trip and called for a change in law enforcement to ease some racial tensions in many cities in the country, but also specifically here in the St. Louis area. What changes do you think departments can make going forward?
I would, again, be interested to hear. This is the first I've heard of this. I would be interested to hear what Representative Clay has in mind. I've spent a lot of time in graduate school studying issues like this. I've taught classes at local universities for the past 7 years in policing, in criminological theory, violent crimes, and also courses on race, ethnicity, and crime, where students are, we engage in very, very positive dialogue about criminological theory and how police tactics and race relations, they're very, very dynamic topics. I think that you'll find that most law enforcement officers, and in particular, our previous chief, Tim Fitch, and now our current chief, John Belmar, would be very open to hearing some of these ideas, but they need to be reasonable ideas. It's one thing to say something publicly, and it's another thing to get those types of policies instituted, because people still want to be protected. People still want to stay safe in their homes. And I think we have to be very careful turning the heat towards police officers and some of the tactics that are very, very rarely used by police officers, and using these very limited circumstances to paint, the entire law enforcement complex throughout the United States with the same brush. I think that's a little dangerous, but I'd certainly, as a leader of a police association representing hundreds of police officers, I'd be very happy to sit down with Representative Clay, other members of the minority community, because what we need and what we've needed over the past week is engaged dialogue where we can sit down and engage in a dialogue and maybe solve some problems and make forward progress. That's what I want. I can tell you right now that John Belmar, our chief of police, and our commanders and our people have not been spoiling for a fight. We don't want to be out there. People have had their vacation days, their recreational days canceled, 12-hour shifts, lots of overtime. Officers are sick. Officers are tired. Officers are missing family events and first days of school for their children. I can tell you that there isn't probably a police officer up there that wouldn't love for this situation to end and allow us to get back to regular law enforcement business. I have some concerns about some of the ideas that I've heard, but I'm certainly open to hearing them. And I would love, again, as I've said already a couple of times, I have no problem hearing input. And I certainly think our chief of police, John Belmar, is going to be on board with that as well, especially once the dust settles from this incident. I think we're going to be able to start looking back. Are there things we could have done better? Possibly. And almost certainly there are some things we'll be able to go back and take a look at. But for now, I think it's a little early, especially when you've seen the situation under the command of the Highway Patrol deteriorate even further than it was Wednesday night when St. Louis County still had control of the situation. So I want our leaders to step up, and I want my leaders to step up. I'm hoping to engage in dialogue with them and try to find some solutions and try to work towards some level of harmony, especially with our minority communities, which, you know, is where a lot of our issues in law enforcement do come from.
Right. I mean, one of the main messages we're hearing from peaceful protesters is that many members of the African-American community feel victimized by police in this city and its suburbs. Is this something that your department discusses and addresses? And if so, how?
Well, I can't speak for the way the folks in the city of Ferguson have been treated. But, you know, it's a very complicated, not only is it kind of criminological in nature, it's also very sociological in nature, because we have outpourings of support from the community. I understand that you're asking me questions about people that have been critical, but I like to also remind that we've received donations and food and letters of support and emails. I was just reading an email about 25 minutes ago from someone in Syracuse, New York, who took the time to look up my email address and sent me a message to say that, you know, we appreciate what you're doing. There's always going to be, law enforcement is a complicated, it is a delicate beast. And sometimes it's not very pretty. And sometimes we shine and we make people proud and we make community leaders proud. And other times we're the subject of criticism. Sometimes that criticism is very, very fair and warranted, and other times it's baseless or unfounded.
Right, but I mean, at risk of pressing the question too far.
It's okay, press it.
I mean, what we're talking about is racial profiling, and if you look at the Attorney General of Missouri keeps statistics that show that African Americans are much more likely to be stopped and searched, but whites are more likely to actually have contraband on them when they are searched. I mean, how has this not been addressed before?
Well, I can tell you in my police department, we have been working with a university out of California, kind of a consortium of researchers. And again, my department has opened their doors to, and this started under Chief Tim Fitch, where we basically invited these folks in, these third-party researchers, to come in and take a look at our operations and how we're doing things, how we're keeping track of statistics, methods that we are using. It's a very, very complicated topic. It's very concerning to me if there are instances of this going on, and as someone that's in a leadership role, I want that type of activity to stop. That being said, just because someone is pulled over doesn't mean there's always a racial motivation behind it. You know, there are layers and layers of complexity to this issue. And I certainly don't have all the answers for you today, Dury, but I can tell you that I hope that someone does have those answers, because I would certainly be willing to listen and hope to hear some solutions or some ideas that could move us towards better relations with certain communities.